Welcome to Sports Central. I'm Rick Drewer.
I'm Phil Fechner.
Well, Phil, what a sensational performance comeback from the Redbacks, eh?
Yeah, 6-3. They've got a bit of a record, haven't they?
6-3, Phil. Yeah, I didn't realise that you were such a rocket scientist when it came to statistics.
Yeah, 6-3.
They are
three.
Now, I think, the fourth only worst batting collapse in the history of Sheffield Shield cricket.
Oh, well, you get a trophy for that?
How good? Well, I think you probably do.
They might get tea or something at the Adelaide Oval with that catering committee.
They could. What an unbelievable... When Weatherall got out...
Yeah, run through them. Run through the batting collapse.
Well, I mean, Weatherall's batted well, got his 150, 160, whatever it was. He's out at 5-316, right?
Oh, pretty solid. That's good.
Nilsson comes in, out 6-316. Cooper comes in.
Yep.
He's out 7-316. Oh. Winter out 8-316. Manny 9-317.
Oh, a bit of a partnership in there.
Huge partnership. And Valente, this really sets
it on fire.
Here
we go. How many did he make?
He didn't make many. All out, 319. Two-run partnership. 6-3 we've lost.
That's disappointing.
6-3.
What's going on there, Rick?
Well, to be honest, Phil, we're over this performance of the Redbacks. I've got another interesting statistic that I think I should bring up. That, do you realise, I thought we'd just start from a sort of round starting figure. So I've gone back to the season of 2000-2001, okay? And there's been 19 Sheffield Shield seasons since then, okay? Now, if it's not well and truly time for our coach, Jamie Siddons, and the high performance manager, whatever that means, Tim Nilsson, to have their positions totally reviewed, let me back that up with a couple of quick statistics. In that 19 seasons, Victoria have won the Sheffield Shield 6 times, Queensland 5, New South Wales 4, Tasmania 3, South Australia and Western Australia haven't won it at all. In those 19 seasons, South Australia has finished bottom 9 times.
Well, if you're not going to go top, you might as well be bottom, I suppose.
Well, there you go. That means that South Australia has finished bottom more times than all the other states put together.
There's another... They must get another trophy for that in the trophy cabinet.
Well, you'd think so. Huh? And but you'd think your high-performance manager would have his finger on the pulse over that, wouldn't you?
Well, he probably has. Yeah, that's not... I mean, we bag him here every week, but... I think we're just totally sick of it, you know, and fed up with the whole setup of that.
Well,
you know,
you are right that we do make the odd, critical but educated comment, but it's beginning to really sort of creep around town.
It's cold heart back,
but,
isn't it?
But they are. You know, and in fact, I've noticed in the press recently, one in particular, a Martin Charles from Woodwill, suggesting that... it's time for CEO Keith Bradshaw and the Sacker to replace him with someone who can move cricket forward in this state. And the him is that Tim Nilsson, the high performance manager. You can only put up with so much before you have to say, hang on, why do we perform so badly? And you have to look at the common denominators. You know, players come and go, but... they seem very, very... they just don't want to make any moves.
I knew they were playing. I heard a couple of scores, but I was just not the least bit interested in the end because I knew they'd collapse and should be just a whitewash again. And lo and behold, I saw you the next day and you said, oh, how about the Redbacks? I said, oh, what was it? Well, I thought they might have hung on. No, 6-3. Yeah.
Well, the other interesting thing is before we... move over to another sport and a couple of your favourite topics. In relation to this ridiculous 11-week break, and now that the Sheffield Shield has resumed, it's rather fascinating that two things have occurred. One is that, in theory, performances in this last half of the Sheffield Shield will influence selection for the upcoming Ashes tour. And yet, while this Shield section is being played, all your top line Australian bowlers are in one of three positions. They're either in India playing in T20 and then the one day series before they go to the UAE, or they're injured and or being rested. So we've had a plethora. Do you like that word, plethora? Hey, good word.
I'm going to look that up later on.
I mean, in this first round, there's been an amazing number of people who you'd argue have put their hand up for possible consideration for test selection. I mean, the naughty boy, Cammy Bancroft, Mr. Sandpaper himself.
Yeah.
I mean, he, against New South Wales, who are actually top of the table, who you could argue, even though their test bowlers are resting or injured, have still got the second best, they probably got the second and third best Shield teams in the competition. He's, after he's come back a 9 months rest, which has obviously done him well, he's just knocked out the 138 not out and the 86 against New South Wales. Curtis Patterson, who got his chance in the test match, he made 134. Now, do you remember a bloke called Nick Maddison?
Yes.
He played test cricket at one stage. He made 108 for Victoria.
Really?
Yep. And Marcus Harris, who had a very ordinary test series, and they were saying, oh, is he going to, you know, whatever. Mm. He's just come out and reinforced his hand for selection in the test series with the 95 and 174. Travi Head made 250s against the Tasmanians. Now, again,
probably not enough.
Well,
what did that 40, 50 every time, and then, boom, there goes his wicket.
That is the big problem. It's the court at Backwood Point gully area, because when he drives, and he loves driving hard, and he does hit the ball well, and he does hit the ball hard, but the big mistake he makes is putting his foot straight down the pitch rather than across to the line of the ball. And although you'll get away with it for a while, and obviously he does, he gets caught there all the time. And the Tassies had, I think, basically it was a really interestingly set field, because they not only had two gullies, but they almost had a short third man gully just behind them, obviously in between the two of them, so you could see the ball. But obviously people have worked him out. And, you know, you'd have thought the high-performance manager might have got him to move his foot across a bit.
What about McEnany? I reckon he needs a longer bat handle, didn't he? Well, he couldn't quite reach that wide delivery, could he?
Oh, no, that's true.
You were a bit disappointed with his opening stance too, weren't
well,
you?
Well, you know, if you...
Is he a young bloke?
Yeah, he's a young bloke.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you walk out, it doesn't matter how good or bad you are in what grade of cricket, you know, the best thing you do is not have to play the first two overs while you get your eye in. But when you use a barge pole to try and reach the first one...
Well, our high-performance coach wasn't much of a batsman himself, let's face it.
Well,
but Siddons was. I mean, he made a truckload of runs, didn't he?
Yeah, I think there's a very good case to argue that Jamie Siddons probably is the best Shield batsman never to have played.
Yeah, I agree.
First,
how unlucky was he? Because, I mean, it was just a super side back then. He couldn't break in.
That's right. And just before we finish off, the thing is, of course, that it's not just the batsman who you can't really evaluate, even though I've just gone through all those runs they've made. It even applies to the bowlers. Now, you take Jackson Bird. I mean, 11 wickets on Adelaide Oval is just a fantastic performance. Without having a go, it was against the South Australian batting lineup, which isn't probably arguably the strongest.
I could take 10.
Oh, Phil, I don't think it'd be quite that many. Probably 8 or 9. But, you know, you've got Jai Richardson and Nathan Coulter-Nile, etc., over in India, both performing well. But how do you compare their performances in a T20 match against a bloke taking 11 wickets in a four-day cricket match? The answer is you can't.
You can't.
And those guys who are on tour basically aren't going to come back to play any of the Shield games. So I don't know whether you just, you know, pull out your 50-cent piece and toss up a few times to see who you go. I mean, obviously, your first three quicks to go to England are there. They're resting. That doesn't matter. But they've got to take a couple of backup
ones. They might do that rock, paper, scissors. See, they were doing that on the footy the other night. You know,
they could.
What are we going to here, eh? Oh, my goodness, eh?
Rock, anyway, paper, I reckon before we move sports,
yep.
I reckon I've got a good joke for
you. All right, let's have it early in the show here, Rick.
Did you hear about the King Edward potato?
No.
And he fell in love with Jim Maxwell. He told his parents that he wanted to marry him. His parents said, "Don't be ridiculous. You're a king, Edward. He's only a common tater."
Oh, no. Oh, I do like that.
Yeah,
that good. Is very good, that's Rick. Good.
Now, what have we got? Change of sports.
Okay, look, we're only just quickly touching. I see your favourite soccer player in the world, Sam Kerr, and they're ranking her as the number one player in the world, or as good as captain.
I think an absolutely wonderful move. It seems to me that women's soccer seem to have got it together. I mean, having said that, I can't quite understand why they gave their coach the flick a little while ago. But to with the new coach, to pick Sam Kerr, who is an inspiration, evidently, I've never met her, but I'd love to. Evidently, on the field, she is simply an inspiration, obviously, not only from her play, but from her leadership. And off the field, she's evidently an incredibly lovely lady. And that is a very smart move. Mm. And you're right. She is as good a female soccer player as anyone going around.
Yeah, they were saying that on the news there the other night. And heard her speak, and she speaks very, very well.
Yeah.
So
I saw good her. We may have even discussed it many moons ago. I saw her. She was on Australian Story on the ABC, and she spoke beautifully. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And very entertaining. As I said to you, I watched that game. I don't even know, they were playing a few weeks back there, and it's very entertaining soccer. Oh, bang, 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 they had three or four goals on the board in 5 or 10 minutes.
They play a brand of soccer which is absolutely attractive. You know,
Attacking.
That's right.
They attack.
Rather than, as often the case in very many of the men's leagues around the world, where everything's based upon defence, and the concept of, well, if we don't have goals scored against us, we're not going to lose. Well, that's possibly right, but if you don't kick a few, you're not going to win either.
You're not winning either, yeah.
And so there's a happy medium. But the Australian women's soccer side plays attractive and goal-scoring soccer. And I was speaking to a few people over the weekend at the cricket, and they all were fans of women's soccer and watched it.
Yeah, so, I hadn't watched a lot of it. So come across a match on Foxtel, and I really did thoroughly enjoy it. All right, enough of that. We'll just touch on something that's happening in Adelaide this week, Clipsal. Right, we've touched on that now, so we're going to the footy. no, the Clipsal is on. It's going to be a hot
that's
one
right, folks,
them, though,
and,
isn't
and,
it?
And Phil's got his finger on the pulse because it's actually no longer called the Clipsal.
Oh, well, whatever. What is it?
It's the Adelaide.
Super cheap or
no,
something.
No, they couldn't.
What do we got?
They couldn't find a major sponsor,
really?
So it's just called the Adelaide 500.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. We'll
should
call
be,
it the Clipsal 500.
It should be good. It'd be great being there, I reckon,
well,
on 45 degrees.
You're sitting in the stand with that sun beating on you. Watching you know, these cars flying
well,
past.
Well, I really shouldn't say this because there are a lot of people, probably many who are listening to us right now, who love the race. But I think the sooner it moves to out to the River Murray,
or
to Tailem Bend, which is basically designed for a race like that, the better. The interruption it causes to the road traffic, etc.
Chaos down eastern suburb there this morning. Yeah. It was just horrific.
The one amazing thing, and you know, being honest with everyone, I'm not a great motor racing fan, but the amazing thing is its popularity.
Mm.
Evidently, the people turn up to watch it even more than when we had the Grand Prix.
I've got to admit, I've probably been to half a dozen of them, I don't like the big long race. I find that very boring. As you go for a walk and try and stretch my legs, I do like the other races
short,
in between, the shorter races. But
I do feel sorry that it's just so hot.
They said 55 to 60 degrees inside the car.
Oh, easily, if not more.
That is, wow.
That's right.
I mean, that's almost pass-out temperature, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And evidently, the whole concept is obviously hydration and that the drivers just must keep drinking or else they will.
Yeah.
I mean, well,
and then you drink and you do have to get rid of it. I know you sweat, but then it's a long race, isn't it?
It is.
Anyway, we'll get on to a bit of footy.
Footy, yes.
Hamish Hartlett, struggling with a knee.
Not good news at all.
Missed the first three.
I would say three minimum from my knowledge of knee anatomy. The fact that he's had a knee reco and he's pulled up short, he's done, my guess is that he's, I mean, probably Port aren't going to admit it, but he's done something to it because obviously he got to the stage where they were even going to play him, I think, this weekend.
Yeah, JLT Cup starts.
And so the fact that during a training session he's re-damaged something to it is not good news at all.
And he's going to, he was saying last night, he's going to come through the SNFL. He's coming through the Maggies. Well, he wants two or three games under his belt at, SNFL level. So,
and, you know, it's got nothing necessarily to do with the quality or non-quality of the surgery. There's a lot of luck involved, particularly in knees, that, you know, you just, well, how you do them even in the first place, wrong time. And yet you look at a bloke like Robbie Gray, who had one, and he's basically been perfect ever since he came back. It's the way it goes.
Okay, we're still on the footy. Hearn and Kennedy, I see they each get another year deal, both all Australians. So I think it's a good appointment again for the West Coast.
Well, let's put it this way. I think they'd slip.
Oh, your side, isn't it?
I think they'd slip into the Port Adelaide side quite comfortably, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Heath Shaw could be in his final year. He is 33 years old, so he's admitted that this could be his last year.
Doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
No, I think he's sort of slowed up a bit.
He has. You
get to that stage, you're very good, and then you just come back with the pack, don't you?
That's it. He's not worthy of a spot, but he's not the player he was.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. Just on some local footy, I said I'd get my head to the ground, the ear to the ground,
yes,
or whatever.
What's the big news?
Well, it's probably not big news, but Malcolm McGrath makes a return to the scene of the coaching ranks at Angaston as assistant to Jay Shannon.
Yes.
So McGrath's been out of the game for a few years. Things change, so it'll be interesting to see what...
It will be, and it's interesting...
Premiership coach.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing, it seems to me, is that... and I was speaking to a few people over the weekend, and I know that we have salary caps and I know we don't have signing on fees, but I was actually talking to someone very high up in the BL&G, and I made comment that it seems that many of the clubs seem to be somewhat flushed with money or incentive schemes, because, and Angaston are amongst the leaders.
And
Gawler Central have got more players back than they've got teams to put them in, I think.
Well... They struggled last year, so they needed
players
back.
Well, they did,
but
you've got Mercer and Co back. I mean, they'll be back there again, I would think.
Don't know. Time will tell.
It will.
Time will tell. Look, quickly, it would be shocking of me if I didn't mention young... Well, I don't know even how young he is. You might know him better than I do, but Jackerman made 267 for Angaston A3s. In the cricket?
Yes.
Off 160 balls. Well, that's amazing.
That's
isn't
a huge performance.
And he hit like 20-odd sixes and 19 fours, so he wasn't out there for, just to stand around and look good.
No. Well,
so, any grade of cricket, you make that sort
that's
of...
That's more runs than you ever made in your entire career, isn't it?
I made one. I don't reckon I hit the ball either that day. But anyway, I got credited with one run. I'm happy with that. So I thought that's...
Well done to him. A very fine performance indeed.
And just quickly, just a quick little roundup. Tanunda, are they going to make it or not?
No, they're gone. No.
Gilbert Valley are gone.
They're signed, sealed, delivered.
So it's Freeling in.
Freeling in. And, I mean, basically
Sandy
what
Creek,
I suggested.
Angaston.
Sandy Creek will play Ango in the semi-final.
Yep.
Freeling will play South Gawler, which is a repeat of the game they played last week, which I actually had the pleasure of umpiring. And, in fact, I guess you could kneel. I mean, I'm sure they didn't do it deliberately, but South Gawler basically gifted Freeling guaranteed fourth place because South Gawler led on the first innings by heaps and then went out and batted about nine overs and declared. And gave Freeling the chase to get the runs. And Parrish, very good player.
Yeah.
Very good player.
Oh, state country.
Yeah.
Yep.
He made runs in their first dig, and then he was, oh, I don't know, 50-odd not out in the second. And they got up and won with...
Oh, there you go.
With, I think he hit the winning four on the first ball of the last over.
We were in a good game to umpire.
Oh, it was a great game to umpire. Yeah. It was played in very good spirit. And but there's no doubt that South Gawler are a far better side than Frillingham, and they'd never give them something like
semi-final. Yeah.
But I think probably the right four sides are in the final four. The order in which they finish is going to be the interesting thing. I think the big problem with South Gawler is that it's not that they haven't got the talent, but whether they have got a psychological problem in their mental ability and feeling that they can or can't beat Angaston is the big question.
Yep.
And, you know, the sad truth is that there's a track record at the moment that says they can't beat them. Mm. You know, they've been in positions before, but I guess there's always a first time. So there you go.
Yeah, finals is a different ball game.
It is.
We're probably up on time I reckon. Yeah. So,
well, I hope, everyone, you've enjoyed it. And until next week, this is Rick.
And this is Phil.